Hello, and welcome to the STEM Untapped podcast series. We're delighted you could join us. Research from Microsoft reveals that having a role model was one of the most effective ways to prevent girls falling out of love with STEM subjects. As all partners at Untapped are female scientists, and many of our clients and associates are female and non-binary scientists, we felt that we had a unique opportunity to match students with a variety of role models of their choice. This way, students can ask the questions that are most important to them, allowing them to gain access into a diverse array of different STEM careers. In this podcast, the students are going to introduce you to Dr. Ananthi Ramachandran, who's a Principal Quality Control Scientist at Achilles Therapeutics Limited. Ananthi studied microbiology at university, and she now works in cancer therapeutics, which are medicines that target specific cancer cells.
What A-levels did you pick, or college courses?
Okay, so for my A-levels, I did biology, chemistry, maths, and psychology. I picked those mainly because I liked them, I guess. I always liked science, and I was always interested in like medicine. So interested in helping people, and I was aiming for medicine, if I'm honest with you, but I realised that quite quickly that I wasn't going to get high enough A-levels for that, to be honest, because you need to get all A's ideally to be a medical doctor. So I thought I'd go down the science route. So those were my A-levels. And then I did biological sciences for my degree at Leicester Uni.
You know how you went to university, and because you did a demanding and hard degree, what was like an average day in your life as a university student?
It was tough, I'm not going to lie. It was, but I would say I worked hard and I played hard. So I made sure that I embraced the entire university experience. So a typical day would be, especially for a biology student, you do have a full day of lectures. So you do have like a 9-to-5 kind of day. It's broken down a little bit with some practical sessions. So depending on what modules you do, you have some fun practical sessions as well. So like I did genetics and I did microbiology, especially for my second year. So there was a lot of fun stuff playing with bacteria. I remember my favorite practical was we had different food types. So we had like a bit of rice, a bit of chicken pie. I think we had a couple of like samples, like body samples, like urine and stuff, and we had to plate them out onto some plates, and we had to identify what bacteria was in them. So that was quite cool. So yeah, those practical sessions were about 2 to 3 hours long. Lectures were about an hour each. We'd finished by 5, and then I was ready to socialize in the evening, obviously sensibly, so I could, especially if I had lectures on the next day. But yeah, it was good. It was a working hard and a good socializing experience as well.
And Ananthi, we were wondering, if you were in our position nowadays, would you have chosen to go to university?
I would, yes. But saying that, I know there are a lot of options at the moment. Even through my work now, I know that there are apprenticeships, which you can do. So you can do apprenticeships and work in a company for about 3 years, and you're still sort of linked to a university. But also, I think having that university experience, the lectures, even living away from home, having to like fend for yourself, even cook for yourself and do your own washing, I think they're quite important learning experiences. It's not just what you go and study, it's the whole experience, I would say.
You said you did biological sciences. You know how it's like usually a male dominant subject. Do you think you were treated differently as a woman doing a subject like that?
I would say not that I've noticed. There's always a big thing with like the gender pay gap. That is a thing. But again, in my current work environment, my boss is female. The boss above her is female. I'm also a manager myself, very female. In fact, like my whole department, we've got 3 boys out of 13. So I think we are tipping the scales in the other side at the moment. So which I love. I think girl power for the win.
As you said before, you found that university, it was hard. And we was wondering, did you struggle with your mental health during your time at school?
So I had 2 university experiences. I was greedy. So I had my undergrad university experience, which was my biological sciences degree. And then I had my PhD experience. So they're both very, very different. So with the undergrad, that was very lecture-based. There was coursework. There was exams. Very structured. Then you have your PhD, which is postgraduate. I chose to go and do that. You don't have to do that. You can stop with a bachelor's degree. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that at all. I chose to go back to do a PhD. There is no structure there. When you're in the science field, you basically organise your own work. You plan your day, you plan your experiments, and you are basically working by yourself, for yourself, on your own project that no one else is working on. So in that sense, you have your support from your supervisor and your peers around you. But yes, I would say, if anything, my mental health struggled a little bit more during my PhD life, especially when things didn't work. So it's not everything went smooth sailing. I can say that I had a 6-month period when none of my experiments worked. And there were a lot of tears and there were a lot of tantrums from myself. So yeah, it's not easy, but the support is there around you. And I think it's very important to talk about how you're feeling. There is always someone in a very similar situation, or sometimes if you just open up a little bit, then you realise that you're not the only one feeling that way. And I think that's quite important.
Do you think all of the stress and emotional stress and everything was worth the PhD in the end?
I have zero regrets. It was probably my proudest day to date graduating from that, mainly because it was quite a tough journey. So to say that, like, looking back at the journey and then just being there wearing my silly floppy hats at the degree ceremony was a very proud moment. And also my parents were very happy as well. Like, my family were very proud of me. So that was nice to see as well.
Before you went on to go to your PhD, in your bio, it did say that you worked in animal research first. What inspired you to do that?
It wasn't so much an inspiration. It was more of a convenience, to be honest. So this company was based in my hometown that I've lived in all my life, and I didn't know it was there. So they contacted me. So I put my CV, as soon as I finished my degree, put my CV out to various recruiters, and I got approached about a job in that company. And it was an excellent experience. I ended up staying there for 4 years. I learned a lot. It was a great opportunity to put everything that I had learned at university to apply it to industry. So in that animal research place, it was the facility makes medication for animals. It was mainly like farm animals, so cows, horses, so the large animals. So yeah, it was still nice to know that I was helping some sort of, I love animals anyway, so it was nice to know that I was helping. Like, my main passion was to help humans, which obviously I'm now in.
You know, the transition from university to animal research, do you think it was smooth, or do you think there's like a big difference from what you were doing in university?
There is a big difference, mainly because in industry you're in the lab more, whereas in university it's a bit more theoretical. So you're more likely to be in the library with your head in a textbook, apart from in your final year when you have like a research project to do. That's when you get your main lab experience at university. In industry, it's quite different, but because it was my first job, the team were very supportive. They knew that I hadn't worked before, so they really spent some good time with me and taught me the basics, which was very helpful. So again, yes, it's between school and university, there's a jump, and between university and the working world, there's a jump, but there is always that support around you for people to help you.
After animal research and doing your PhD, do you believe it would have been easy to find a job for your biology degree?
Yes. So I was quite lucky after my biology degree. So within 3 months, I had a job. So I graduated in the July, actually 2 months, and then I started the job in September. So that all came quite quickly. So that was quite lucky. I would say, and my mum would definitely tell you the same thing, I got a bit too comfortable with the job and with the people. I enjoyed myself a bit too much. So I ended up staying in that company for the 4 years. Whereas I think if I could change anything now, I would probably have left the company and gone somewhere else, because the quickest way to learn things is, I found recently, is to just move around a little bit, like, not obviously every month, but say spend a year at a company, then move to another position in the same company or somewhere else. And then you get the best learning experiences because every company will do things differently.
You worked at two different places, or maybe even more. Do you think you were like treated differently as a person of colour as well as a woman in STEM? Or do you think that everyone is nice?
So I think if I was to really think hard, and I have a very different way of looking at, I treat everybody exactly the same, and I hope that people would do the same with me, regardless of my gender or my race. So with that mindset, sometimes even if there is some level of discrimination, I don't tend to spot it straight away because I like to live in my little bubble that it's not happening. I think perhaps if I sat back and I really thought about it, I could probably point out instances where there has been some level of discrimination. But honestly, it's not been to a level where it's been noticeable or it's affected me directly.
And Anthony, do you believe that all the effort that you put in for this career worth it?
I do think it is worth it. There have been many times, mainly during my PhD, where I was questioning whether the effort is worth it. So it's completely natural to feel that way and to question what you're doing. But yes, to the path that I've taken to date, I'm very happy with. I never thought that I would be in a position where, so the company that I'm working for right now, they're fairly new, so they're only about 5-6 years old. So I never thought I'd be in a position where I could help like set up like a manufacturing process where the drug product is in the very early stages. And I've had a fair bit of progression in my career in the last 2-3 years as well, which I'm quite happy about. So I'm happy with how it's going and everything at the moment. So yes, I would completely say it's worth it. I would say it's very important to whatever you choose to do, whether it's university or whether it's college or not, or any, like if you're going straight to a job, just make sure you enjoy what you're doing, because that's the key thing. You don't necessarily need to be good at it, because you can learn. You can always learn things. The fundamental thing is you have to enjoy it, because then you'll be willing to learn. You'll be willing to put that time in.
So do you see yourself working for the company that you work at now for a long time?
I think at the moment, there are a few milestones that the company wants to reach that I want to see. So I want to see it reach a certain level. But at the same time, I will always be looking at what's out there just to see what the options are. But at the moment, no, I'm very happy with where I am.
Do you believe that with the work you are now,
do you think you're making a difference
in the research?
I would say I am. So let me explain a little bit about it for you. So I'm sure you've heard of cancer. And the treatment for cancer at the moment is chemotherapy. So chemotherapy is good, it works, but it's not able to differentiate what's good and what's bad. So it will attack the cancer cells, but it also attacks the good cells at the same time, because it doesn't know. It just goes in and just goes for everything. So for that reason, you end up with a lot of side effects, and everybody gets that same kind of treatment, that chemotherapy treatment. So the company that I'm working for, so if a patient's got cancer, we take a part of their blood and part of the tumor, and we look at what cells are in the blood and the tumor. So in that tumor, there'll be good and bad cells. So we take the good cells out, we multiply them, put the good cells back into the patient so they can then take over that tumor and attack it. So that treatment is specific for that patient. So say if myself and you are getting the same treatment, what's come out of my body can't go into you, and vice versa. So it's a personalized treatment. And then there are a lot less side effects because it's just targeting what's necessary. In that sense, yes, I think I'm making a big difference. Unfortunately, it's not for all of the cancers. There's just a couple. So it's skin cancer and lung cancer at the minute for this particular company. But it's an idea of where it could go, the personalized treatment, which I think is great. The aim is to go global, all being well. And so at the moment, it's clinical trial phases at the moment. So we're still in the trial phase. But if everything passes and everything's happy, or the regulations are all met, then hopefully, fingers crossed, it will be available for everyone.
Could you explain what the clinical trials are?
Okay. Imagine you're like baking a cake or something, and you don't have a recipe. you found things in your cupboard. You've got your eggs flour, your butter, your sugar, and then you've got all random ingredients like chocolate, banana, strawberries, kiwi fruit, maybe even salt, you know, pepper, chili powder. You've got all sorts of random stuff. Okay. So you're going to put that all together and you're going to try it. And the first one might not taste so good because you've got an all sorts of eclectic mix of things that you haven't really thought about and you've just thrown it in. Don't get me wrong, us scientists aren't that bad, but some moments I feel like we are. So you've got like a random eclectic mix, okay? So the first one doesn't taste so good. So then the second time you're like, right, what can I do to improve it? So that's kind of like with a drug product. That's how it is in the lab level. So you are doing very basic stuff. You're looking at it. You're not, it doesn't go anywhere near humans at this point. It's all in the lab. You're working on cells or a sample of a tumor or something like that. And so they're very basic experiments done in the lab. Then when you're happier with that process, we can start thinking of putting it into a human. So usually for cancer patients, one of the prerequisites is unfortunately they do have to have cancer, because otherwise how would you know? So you have patients that are volunteers. They are willing to go through a trial with an unknown drug. So it's not something that's on the market. It's not something you can buy from a shop. You don't 100% know if it's going to work. You don't 100% know what the side effects are because it's brand new. So people recruit loads and loads of these people who are willing volunteers. Sometimes you do get paid for it, to be honest. There are clinical trials where you can volunteer yourself to go on that trial, and they have to get as many people as they can, trial out the product and see whether it works, see what the side effects are. Everything is monitored very, very carefully, because obviously you can get into a lot of trouble if it goes wrong. So even before you get to that stage, it's got to be in a very, very good state. You can't just go and put anything into a human being or even an animal for that matter. So it's a very, very long process. It's not quick. It will take about 2 to 3 years minimum, I would say.
Do you think, since you've done your PhD and you're doing all this research, do you think you're more appreciated in society and by like the people around you more than before?
Yeah, I have a lot of admiration for a lot of people in different fields, like even the NHS and the medical fields. I have a lot of admiration for those people. I also have a lot of admiration for like other scientists, just having been through the PhD experience and knowing that not everything goes the way you want it to all the time. I think people still being able to carry on with a smile on their face and still enjoy what they're doing. I really admire that, definitely.
Working with cancer and the antibiotics and that, do you feel emotionally involved in your work in a positive or negative way?
Yes. So I'm very emotionally invested in my job, to the point where I probably work too many hours. I don't ever stop. I don't ever do a 9-to-5. I work a bit too much sometimes. That's probably because it's not just myself, it's my team and majority of the company. We all care about where this is going and what we're doing. So you're surrounded by people who all are working towards the same goal and all have that same work ethic, and they all don't mind staying a little bit longer or having an hour less sleep. I would say it's had a positive impact on me, because it's nice to have a job that you care about as well. I think that makes a big difference, because then that motivates you to get up and come to work every day, which is nice as well.
When you were younger, was there anything in your childhood that inspired you for your future aspirations?
So when I was younger, I was quite into medicine. So I liked all the medical programs. So there used to be a program called Children's Hospital that I used to watch. It was a real life thing. So it wasn't like a drama or anything. It was like a documentary, and the cameras would go in to the children's hospital, and you'd see all these little, unfortunately, some very sick children, and the doctors and nurses like treating them. And I quite enjoyed watching that. Like, there were a lot of happy endings. Unfortunately, there were a few sad endings as well, but I did enjoy watching that. So at that point, I would say the helping people has always kind of been in my nature. How I was going to do that, I wasn't so sure. But at year 11, I did some work shadowing and work experience at a hospital as well, just to get a bit of an idea of what it would be like, which I thought was quite valuable. And then I enjoyed biology anyway, so that was like my favourite subject. So that's what kind of what influenced my decision.
You was talking about doing work shadowing when you were younger. How did you go about getting that opportunity?
So with the work experience, that was like that was led by my school. So that was in year 10. And we had a week where we all had to, so the whole of the year, were doing some level of work experience somewhere. So I contacted the local hospital because that's what I was interested in. So yeah, for the work experience, that was a little bit easier because it was led by the school. For the work shadowing, that was 2 days, and I shadowed a doctor in an A&E department in my local hospital. That was pretty difficult to get. I spoke to my GP, actually, strangely, and she wrote a letter to the hospital on my behalf to say that I was very interested in shadowing, and that seemed to work. But I think it's always worth contacting companies, hospitals, or anything that you're interested in. It's certainly worth reaching out. And I think now you've got social media as well, so you can certainly make use of like Twitter, LinkedIn, those kind of things to get you those contacts as well.
You know how you said you wanted to go into medicine, but then you weren't so sure about like your grades. Are you happy that you've taken the path that you did now, or do you think you would have enjoyed going to like the medicine path?
I am happy with the path that I've taken. So when I got into biological sciences, there was part of me that thought once I finished that degree, if I wanted to do medicine after that, I would move over. So you can do the 3-year biological sciences, and then there is the option to use that as a foundation and then apply for a medical degree. It's still another 5 years, so it would have been a long time, but I had that option in my mind. But no, after I was a year into my biological sciences degree, and I thought, no, I will stick to a biology and see where that takes me. So yeah, no regrets with not doing medicine. Full of admiration for everybody who does it, but I think I'm more suited in what I'm doing now than a medical doctor.
You know how you mentioned apprenticeships? Do you think your career would have been a bit different? And like, how do you think your career would have progressed if you decided to go and do an apprenticeship instead of university?
So the advantage of an apprenticeship is that, so you're placed in a work environment, and you are, even though you're technically an apprentice, you are basically doing a job for that company. So we've got a girl working, not in my department, but she's an apprentice, but she's like a lab technician, basically. It's a very important role that she's doing. She has like a university day where she works from home for 1 day a week. So it's 8 hours of study time. And then the other 4 days, she's at, like, physically on site in the lab at work. She's getting the benefits of working for a company, being in the same environment as some, I would say, fairly knowledgeable people. She's surrounded by people doing this job day in, day out, so she can ask questions, that knowledge is there. Also, I believe there are different lengths of these apprenticeships, but this particular person's apprenticeship is 3 years and 3 months, so that's a long time. So the transferable skills that you can probably get from that, and you can take to a different company, or I wouldn't be surprised if our company like offered a permanent position for her afterwards. So that's also an option as well. So I think it's definitely worth exploring. Another thing that I could probably mention, as well as apprenticeships, there are university degrees with like an industrial placement for a year. So you've got a usual degree is like 3 years. This one will be 4 years. So in your third year, you have a year out and you go and work in industry, and then you come back and you complete your fourth year. So that's another one to bear in mind, that that exists as well.
Growing up and even to this day, is there any female role models in that in biology that you have?
There is a lady called Henrietta Lacks. She is a lady close to my heart because I worked with cells that came from this lady during my PhD. So basically, this lady had cancer, and she's just an ordinary lady, actually, She wasn't a scientist. She was just an ordinary lady. She had cancer. People extracted the cancer cells from her and they basically multiplied them and froze them without her permission, without her knowing, and without any of her family knowing. No one knew that they'd done this. And those cells from this original lady are still being used in research to this day. And it's only more recently that she's getting credit for it. So those cells are called HeLa cells. So they're now named after her because she's Henrietta Lacks. So they're called HeLa cells. So these play a massive role in cancer research now. So I would say, because she was like not from any research that she did, she was just being a wonderful female. Unfortunately, she got ill. But she has made a huge, huge difference in the world of research, not even for cancer research. I didn't do cancer research for my PhD, but I still use those cells for other things. So it's helping biology in so many ways, I would say.
Would you recommend any online resources for girls our age interested to do STEM?
The most underrated resource is YouTube, I would say, because there are so many things, even just very basic lab techniques or even not so basic lab techniques. If you want to learn something, a lot of them are on there. Like I find myself on YouTube a lot just figuring out what someone's spoken about in a meeting about an hour ago, and I'm sitting there Googling and I'm on YouTube. So definitely YouTube. There is also a magazine called The New Scientist. Sometimes it's a bit complicated to read, like they use a bit like heavier language, I guess, but sometimes the articles are great. So I would certainly say New Scientist magazine as well. Another option would be sometimes if you go on, I'm not sure if Twitter's that used much these days, but if you search hashtags of anything that you're interested in Twitter, sometimes you come up with an actual scientist working on those things, and they're quite cool to follow sometimes as well.
Thank you for joining another STEM Untapped podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, then subscribe for free on your podcast app. You can follow us on Instagram at STEM Untapped. If you know of a school or group of students who would like to interview female role models, do get in touch. Likewise, if you know of anyone who would be a great female or non-binary STEM role model, please let us know. Our details are all documented in the show notes.